Hello, welcome to the AFPG Comics Podcast, episode 178. That's a lot of numbers. Oof. That's a big number.
Big number.
My name is Dave Brick. I'm here with Nathan Simmons. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm pretty excited. It's a big weekend.
Yes, we all have Monday off in America.
Yes, yeah, that's.
If you're in Canada, you don't. You have to work Monday.
Not feeling the celebratory spirit, but I am feeling the stay home and chill and listen to records.
Nice. I think there was a really important day a couple days ago, wasn't there? It was someone's birth.
Oh, yeah, my birthday was this week. Yeah, yeah, I'm 34 now.
You were born a few days ago.
I was born a few days ago. My day of my birth just occurred.
You're like Ra's al Ghul. You're reborn every
yep.
year.
I'm the head of the demon.
And young. Well, happy birthday.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Yeah, the League of Shadows will soon make its march on Gotham.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I don't get super hype about birthdays. But yeah, I was, this was a nice one. This is a relaxing one for sure.
That's awesome. Well, I like that you use the word relaxing since I got you a candle.
You did. Perfect. Yes. Thank you.
I gifted you a candle.
It smells so good.
Sounds really weird.
No,
out of context.
It was a candle adorned with comic book art. So it's 100% my vibe.
If you haven't guessed yet, this is the Comic Book Podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week, review our favorite comics, and we have special guests on too. Zach Kaplan. He was on 17 weeks ago. Yeah, I looked it up. And now he's on again to talk about Forever Forward, a new Scout Comics book out in August. Mm-hmm. You can also pick it up at STCC. We're going to talk all about this time travel comic.
Mm-hmm.
Why now? Why Scout? What's going on with the art? We get into it.
Yeah, it's a fun book. And that was a fun conversation. I'm excited to listen back to it and also to see. You know what's the one problem with when we get these like advanced review copies for interviews and coverage?
Yes.
Is now we have 2 months to wait until we see where the story goes. I'm also looking forward to rereading it when it actually comes out so I can experience it with everybody. It's a really fun one.
It's sort of like when Netflix puts out a show, mm-hmm. you binge it, and then 3 years later, another season comes, and you're like, I think I watched this before.
Right. Yeah, no, I watching the recap of season 3 of Stranger Things, I was like, did I skip it? Did I?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Some people might need a recap for Dan Slott's return to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
What?
Bring him those pictures.
This was definitely the biggest news as far as AIPT traffic is concerned. Thousands, I'm talking thousands of clicks and lots of tweets praising and getting excited and getting angry about Dan Slott, Mark Bagley kicking off a new Spider-Man ongoing series. Yeah. It's literally called Just Spider-Man this time. That means there
are
going to be two Spider-Man
books. Spider-Man this time.
Just this time, not last time. There hasn't been multiple Spider-Man books in, gosh, a long
time. It's been a minute.
At Marvel.
Yeah. Multiple ongoings, at least. You know, we've had other, like, one-shots and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's exciting. It's, you know, Dan Slott and Mark Bagley returning to the Spider-Verse.
Go ahead. This spins out of Edge of Spider-Verse, a mini event that is sort of coinciding with other Spider-Verse stories, which is going to be introducing a bunch of new characters, including this week they introduced the gay Spider-Man, which was a kind of a weird way of putting it, but I think, was it comicbook.com that had the exclusive on that?
I don't remember.
But Edge of Spider-Verse is going to be introducing all these new Spider-Man characters, and when Spider-Man comes out and spins out of that, Morlin will be the main villain that Dan Slott will be tackling.
Yeah, you're talking about Web Weaver, who's a fashion designer who creates a Spider-Man suit, and I love this design. I love this design so much. Yeah, no, I'm excited to see this creative team back. I know it's like you said, it's a very controversial period of Spider-Man books, but I have always adored how Dan Slott pushed Spider-Man to the brink and changed things in very. I mean, that it is an entire run full of big swings, no pun intended. The one thing that I'm a little bummed out about. Is the fact that like I'm kind of over Spider-Verse stories, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Or maybe I need a little bit more time before another one. So, you know, we'll see how much this, you know, really, really ties into it. But I, you know, I kind of would just like to see them writing new Spider-Man stories without having to read Morlun is back in the log line.
Totally, yeah.
But we'll see.
Something Slott was tweeting on Saturday morning that he wasn't just given this book. He actually pitched it. And Nick Lowe agreed they had to print it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of articulating mm-hmm. the fact that he earned this story. And it's so good, it had to be told. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I think it'll be cool. And again, I think it's cool to have multiple ongoing Spider-Man books again. I mean, at one point we had like four or five.
Sure,
I feel
yeah.
like. Also in Marvel Comics news, X-Men 2099 is going to be introduced in Spider-Man 2099, Exodus number 5, the last issue of Steve Orlando's mm-hmm. Series of one-shots, all building towards this story, sort of like the Darkhold last mm-hmm. year. They released some X-Men designs, including a Cyclops with one eye, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. There's a Cable, there's a guy named Northstar, Phoenix, mm-hmm. a new Phoenix. Really cool designs by Kim Jacinto. Jacinto.
Yeah, this looks great. And I love that they're still using the original X-Men 2099 cover treatment. I love these yeah. new Sentinel designs that sort of echo Onslaught a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of 90s babies are going to be very happy to see this book.
This is true. This is true. Marvel also asked the question, who is Bedlam?
Mm.
And they promise we all will find out with Venom number 9 by Al Ewing
yeah.
and Brian Hitch, their ongoing Venom series.
And if you don't know
the identity of this character.
About Bedlam, he thick.
Mm.
He a dummy thick symbiote.
He a thick red symbiote. Yep, that's
yep,
right.
Yep, yep. This is, you know, it's a question I didn't know I was meant to be asking, but now I do know, and I'm excited to find out, because it seems like they're going to make a big reveal. I, you know, and considering how much, you know, bopping around in time and in different versions of the same events we're seeing, I've already got my theories.
I think it's Dylan. But he's like old.
I think it's either Dylan or it's another Eddie.
Ooh, a multiverse Eddie.
Or Eddie, you know, because Eddie's, you know, it has found out that he can reach out through time, through the Codex.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, maybe he got lost at some point. Maybe we're looking at a real, spoilers for Pixar's Lightyear, but we're looking at a real Lightyear situation here.
Oh, shoot. Did you see Lightyear?
No, but I did see the pitch meeting video.
There you go. That covers it all. There's some movers and shakers when it comes to the comics industry. Comixology head of content Chip Mosier stepped down this mm-hmm. week. He's being replaced with Bryce Gold for... basically, if you've ever read a Comixology Originals, that's Chip Mosier's work mm-hmm. as far as... pulling together creative teams, pulling together story ideas. He's been doing great work at Comixology for, years and years
Definitely.
And years. He was on the APT Comics podcast, 2 years
right.
ago, and we talked all about what it takes to curate these stories, which is really mm-hmm. cool. It's good that they have a replacement, but more change? I don't know if
Comixology
needs
that
right now.
Another big shakeup at Comixology. And it was really announced in such a innocuous, like, small way, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so strange that it just kind of came out of a tweet.
It really is. And I mean, okay, so to recap a couple things. Mm-hmm. Comixology.com retired, went to Amazon.com, complete shit show as far as the UI, user experience, download experience. Comixology kept saying they're going to fix it. They did some minor fixes. I think they're still trying to fix everything. Meanwhile, the co-founder of Comixology, David Steinberger, became an Amazon executive, then stepped down and is now doing something else. Mm-hmm. So, like, all this unrest, I mean, it's hard to not think somebody screwed up, or it's a very rocky road. Mm-hmm. And it's really surprising because Amazon basically had this golden gem, the creme de la creme of digital comics reading apps, mm-hmm. and have just fumbled it all the way down the hill. And that hill is where people play football, in my metaphor.
it's all coming together. I'm not really sure what to expect from this, but it is, like you said, it is good that there's already someone lined up to take over, but it just does seem like boy, a whole lot all at once, right?
Yeah, it really does. I know Scott Snyder has a couple Comixology originals that have yet to come out too, so they've clearly got some powerhouse creatives still in the canon, but
yeah,
this could mean a drought or a hiccup as far as new stories in years
we'll
to come.
We'll see. I mean, it, maybe this has been in the works for a little bit and it was just all the announcements were staggered, you know. It's really hard to tell what goes on behind the scenes in that way.
Meanwhile, another webcomic publisher, Tapas, is teaming up with Endeavor Content for a new multi-immersive webcomic experience called Drac, Son of Dante.
Yeah.
And heading this is Saladin Ahmed, comics creator, but also Oscar and Emmy winning filmmaker, writer and producer Travon Free, and Oscar nominated director, writer and producer Shaka King.
Yeah.
So like, they've got some pretty cool creators this building this vampire
looks
world.
So rad. Yeah. I mean, I'm a sucker for vampire stuff anyway, but like that's an incredible team on this.
It's also cool that it's a multi-immersive webcomic experience. I think AWA is also kind of exploring this. There's a couple publishers toying with this a little bit, but there is a 15-episode free-to-read series that'll be coming out. And then, of course, multi-immersive means other formats,
different media. Yeah, and what's interesting? I kind of appreciate how simple the log line is. Drac is a bold new take on vampires and immortals. That's it. Come on, you lucky so-and-sos. Like, you know what? I appreciate the audacity of just saying, like, yeah, vampires, but we're doing it.
Right.
Like, one of my favorite movie titles of all time is John Carpenter's Vampires, because that title just tells you, wait till you see what this asshole does with vampires.
That's pretty
and
good.
And I the little bit of artwork that's come out is really cool and really exciting talent attached to the project.
Speaking of talent,
yeah,
Z2 gave us more details about Blondie Against the Odds, a comic they originally announced way back in February. Well, now we know it's coming out in August. There's a 21-page biography by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti with Montos, who is also collaborating with Christopher Priest on that book we talked about last week, Entropy.
Yeah, and it's releasing alongside a gigantic box set of Blondie albums, outtakes, B-sides, a really like big celebration of one of my favorite bands, so I'm very excited about that. And these art prints from, you know, big names like Colleen Doran like are just gorgeous.
Michael Allred, all over Z2. Yeah. He was also on the Weird Al.
Weird Al, he did the Bowie book. Him and Laura Allred did that Bowie book a couple years ago. Z2's been crushing it. The Jimmy World book was really good, too. Like, I'm really enjoying, like, this intersection between music and comics. And, yeah, I when this was first announced, it was my understanding that it was a full-length graphic novel, but I guess that's not the case, which is fine. That's still such a cool team to work on this story. And I'm curious to see what form it takes, if it's, you know, jumping around in time or if it's a very specific moment in the band's history or what. But really cool stuff.
Yeah. So Connor and Palmiotti are doing this 21-page biography, but then there's also 14 additional stories. Doesn't really make sense. I don't know what that means.
That is interesting.
Stories, but
yeah.
We've got, you know, J.H. Williams, Anthony Marquez, Lisa Weber. We've got all these creators doing these additional stories. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're similar to Weird Al. They're like,
it's more of an anthology
that are like converted into tale or yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it's an anthology. But
what was the one what was it called? Was it Comic Book Tattoo? What was the one that had there was like a Tori Amos collection. Like,
that's the one.
Yeah. Just tattoo. Absolutely fantastic. So if that's what this is, then that's awesome. I'm just kind of it feels like the pitch for it is kind of mutated a couple of times, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
But either way, I'm really excited to check it out.
Speaking of mutations, when you think of comics, do you think of NASCAR?
Yes, sir.
I don't.
I always turn my books to the left.
Warner Brothers Ally, which is a bank, and Milestone Media.
Yeah,
and also Discovery.
Yeah, I got my car loans through Ally. It's not a big deal.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even know Ally existed until they were doing these collaborations with Warner.
It's not a big deal. They got me my car. It's fine.
There's a Alex Bowman's NASCAR race car.
Yeah.
Number 48 is going to have Static on the hood of the car, as well as a his full, like, I don't know, flame retardant bodysuit will also have Milestone imagery
that
on there.
Rules. This is cool.
That was announced.
I seriously, like, I, you know me, I'm a toy car guy. I would 100% buy a little Hot Wheels of this one.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So at the Quaker State 400, we'll be able to see this race car going, zipping around the track. If it's called Quaker State 400, does that mean it's they go around the track 400 times?
Oh, I don't think that's true, is it?
It's July 10th, anyway.
We really should.
So tune in.
Yeah, we need to do some more NASCAR research.
But yeah, July 10th, you can watch Static go around the track at least 200 times.
I'm looking forward to seeing. He's going to have a hand-painted helmet also for the race, and that's so cool. Hell yeah, Static.
Yeah.
Love to see
the art is by Olivia Coipel with Brad Anderson on colors. And then finally, you know we love to talk about numbers on this show. We always spend very little time talking numbers, but we like to bring up the fact that Comic-Con, one of the best as far as bringing up numbers, reported this week that 2021, so rich, $2.075 billion in print and digital download sales from the comics industry, compared to 2020, which was $1.2 billion. That's a lot of more billions. Yeah. That's 0.8.
I don't know, man. I think comics are done. I think that's it.
Yep.
No, that's so exciting. To see the, you know, to see comics still booming, to see manga still booming, and to see like all the different avenues that these are coming through. You know, people are still buying print copies. It's not all digital, and but those are still there for you. Comic stores are doing well, you know.
700 million.
Yeah.
Compared to book channels, which is 1.1 billion, and then there's digital downloads, which is 170 million. Yeah, it's way more than digital.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I think people should shut up. Actually, what's funny is somehow AIPT was tagged into this long thread. Oh. Someone was like, I don't know why they tagged us, but it was just, I was like, because of this, I saw this argument, because there are so many haters who love to go, comics are dying because they're too woke.
Oh,
and then
sure.
There are people who take this data and they show it to them, and then they go, this isn't real data, this is fake data.
Well,
and then, of course.
That's because you're trying to apply logic to people who don't have it.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, you can't win these arguments.
No, you cannot. But, you know, they can shut up. And I'm really excited to see that, yeah, comics are not going broke, and they can stay woke. And
best year ever.
Yeah.
Best
year. I love it. I mean, last year was pretty scary, you know, the year before that, you know, with comic shops closing and lockdowns in place and everything. So it's nice to see comics, not only the industry, not only bouncing back, but finding new avenues, new fans, and coming back better than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. I mean, this show will continue on. You know, there was a moment there where the sales were so bad, I didn't think we were going to ever do the show.
Well, you guys, I mean, there was a little while where nothing was coming out. So you were doing like book club episodes, right? That was before Forrest and I.
Yes, that's right. We did a Swamp Thing episode and stuff.
Yeah. You should have waited.
I'm joking,
of course. You should have
waited. Yeah, we should have waited. Yeah, you're right. Moving on to our next segment, our top books of the week. We're going to figure out what our top two comics are. I still haven't figured out mine, so I'm going to let Nathan go first. Oh. What was your second favorite book of the
week? My second favorite book of the week was The Swamp Thing, number 14 by Ram V and Mike Perkins. This is the long-awaited Swamp Thing teams up with Green Lantern issue, and it slaps. This more than maybe any other issue of the series so far feels like it really put me in the feeling of like reading the Alan Moore run of the book, specifically like all those issues where Swamp Thing was adrift in space, but this kind of brings it more into global concerns. We're not really so much dealing with you know, Swamp Thing impregnating a space alien. But there's this, it's a beautiful story of Hal Jordan sending Levi into this oncoming swarm from space that of spores that are going to destroy the Earth, to basically try to reason with it and try to reach out to the Green one more time. And meanwhile, the Parliament of Gears is making its final march against the world. To this big battle is about to go down between all of the elemental forces of the earth. And it just, this issue really feels like we're gearing up to the big finale. Like I was, there was so much happening here that I was honestly shocked how many different wheels are kept spinning, to the point where there's one sequence where they're describing how the final war will play out. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to see that when it happens in a couple issues. And then we're in it. Like, I'm like, oh no, we're not just setting this up. It's happening now. And there was just a real thrill of discovery throughout this issue. And just gorgeous artwork. You know, there's a bit towards the end where Swamp Thing becomes supercharged, and that just is a really fascinating visual that I had not seen before. And it brought back characters from the Alan Moore run that I was excited to see. And also just, it's a good superhero book that also is dealing with really heady issues and topics. And yeah, great book. Beautiful page layouts too. Mike Perkins is still doing some insane things with how he's spacing. Something we talked about with Zach in our interview is spacing panels throughout these double page spreads to show like a greater thing happening amidst all these smaller, more intimate moments.
Nice. Yeah, Swamp Thing is, this has got to be one of the all-timer story arcs, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and I say this as someone who loved Jeff Lemire and Scott Snyder's run back in the New 52 era. And
yeah, that was a good
but
run.
Like, this is, I think, my favorite Swamp Thing series since Nancy Collins was writing it, probably.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I just adore it.
My second favorite book of the week was one of my favorite series of the year so far. X-Men Red number 4 by Al Ewing. Juan Cabal, Andreas Ginolet, and Michael Sta-Maria. There were three different artists, three different story plots in this issue. The entire issue, though, which is, it all deals with death, which is a theme that I noticed Al Ewing has been doing a lot of in other story arcs for a couple years now. In particular, this issue, I had a hard time picking my top two, in part because there are a couple other books that were like really good in other ways. This issue really resonated with me because it comes together so well with these three plots about death. We've got Magneto, who's now on the council on Arrakis, and the Arrakan people, these mutants, they have a different concept of death. They don't like the idea that you can be reborn. They think life and death should matter, and he kind of sits on the council explaining things to them and talking about it in an interesting way. Meanwhile, we've got Storm dealing with some politics. There's a dead mutant out in space, and some people are questioning whether they should rebirth this person or not.
Right.
And then there's another plot point with Rockslide, who in Ten of Swords, who was reborn, but he was reborn when he was in Otherworld, and thus his personality is like the combination of every like rock slide there is. So this is a character that's been reborn, but he's not himself anymore.
Right.
And he has this interesting conversation on the beach with Sunspot about how, you know, all these other mutants don't think he's the same mutant anymore. And his identity has changed, but he still wants to live. Mm-hmm. And because he was reborn, he wants to live a good life to honor the rock slide that died. I don't know. There's a lot of interesting ideas here about life and death. And it got me thinking, and it got me thinking about life, and that's something I always want in superhero books. These books where larger-than-life characters, insane plots, impossible sci-fi concepts, but yet you're still sitting there going, ah, life.
Yeah.
Something I should cherish. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, X-Men Red has just been truly, and Sabretooth are my two favorite X-Men books on the shelf, because they are really exploring the moral and metaphysical implications of how the X-Men are running things now.
Right, and I mean, there's a place for superhero books to be that fantastical escapism, but then there is a place, of course, for books like this where you're contemplating life and death while also enjoying some of these escapism.
Absolutely.
Speaking of escapism, what's your favorite book of the week?
Oh, man, my favorite book of the week was Ghost Cage, number 3, by Nick Dragota and Caleb Gallner. This little miniseries has just been indescribable. I mean, it's a parody of dystopian futures while also being a out and out action story. It feels like a perfect tribute to the works of like Akira Toriyama. It feels a little bit of Astro Boy, a little bit of Ghost in the Shell. We're dealing with the separation between artificial life and human life, and also, you know, getting into some fun comedy where characters can't remember each other's names, or characters are, you know, they get to a room that's all, the idea is that they're fighting through different rooms that have different forms of fuel in them, and they get to the solar room and they all just decide to kick off their suits and get a tan and then, okay, well, yeah, we got to move on and fight the nuclear power room. And it's but also wrapped up in all of this is this beautiful story about family and found family and loss and people finding love in the most unexpected places. And I haven't read anything else like this all year, and it has just been a joy to see this story really evolve over just a short couple of issues. I cannot recommend this book enough.
This and Future State Gotham makes a case for black and white comics.
Oh, for sure. In American Absolutely. Comics. This is one of those books that like it lives and dies by this art style too. Like I think it is the perfect synthesis of style and storytelling. You know, there's I'm a sucker for like speed lines in a manga inspired story. And this just like, yeah, I don't know, there are reactions here that just hit so much harder because it's got that kind of cartoonish element to it. And, and also on the same token, when it gets violent or when it gets scary, it feels weird. It feels uncanny. You know, and I can't wait to pick this up in trade and read the whole thing. Like I think it's a perfect, you know, sit down, read the whole story together.
Sure. Collected format.
Absolutely.
Nice. My favorite book of the week was Sins of the Black Flamingo, #1 by Andrew Wheeler and Travis Moore.
Yeah.
There is a character in this book known as Florida.
Yes. Yeah.
It actually opens with this amazing montage of Florida and all the different flavors of Florida, which is crazy.
That was almost my Kapow moment glamorous. This week, because I was just like, this is accurate.
That's funny. Some guy like wearing a diaper running around.
Yeah.
This story is basically a detective, a supernatural sort of detective, mm-hmm, who takes on cases. We get to witness a full case in this first issue, as well as the start of another case.
Yeah.
It's very much steeped in this glamorous, rich, evil rich kind of people, mm-hmm, in Florida, and I think it's really cool that it's set in Florida, for instance, for starters, just because it's so different. I mean, mm-hmm, it's you can tell it's noir in a way, mm-hmm, but it's still so bright. Florida requires.
It's like deceptively bright and roots things in a understandable, recognizable evil. A fun first issue. I loved this book.
It also tackles kind of concepts like, you know, being gay, mm-hmm, how gay people were subjugated even when we won the war in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Jewish elements to this as well. So there's real cultural elements.
It's getting into all kinds of bigotry and different. Like, look, man, I live in the Bible Belt and it's fucking bleak.
Yeah.
And I think that this doesn't shy away from how ugly people can be towards people that they see as quote unquote lesser than. And it explores that both through differences in class and in wealth disparities and in just good old fashioned homophobia. Like it is
right.
This is such a fascinating story in that it's very fun, but it doesn't flinch away from that ugliness.
Right. And the fun really centers on Black Flamingo, this main character
who is amazing.
Very extra.
Do what?
Yeah. Very extra.
Oh yeah. In the best way. I love exactly, this character so much.
I can't wait for cosplayers to take on this.
Oh, yeah. No, if you don't think I've already looked into fun.
That's funny. But yeah, I think it was a really solid first issue. And, you know, as someone who loves detective noirs and supernatural mixing together, it feels new, but also familiar.
Absolutely.
And so in that way, it was very entertaining. Speaking of entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, standout moment of the week.
I'm ready for this one.
It's our favorite moment of the week. My favorite moment of the week comes from Variance Number One by Gail Simone and Phil Noto. It's a moment where we have Jessica Jones trying to drink some coffee and these two bastards show up. And she casually smashes an entire pot in one guy's face, punches another without even looking or turning away from her sip of coffee.
It felt good.
I just think it's such a badass little moment. And
classic Jessica.
Yeah, I think it's just the casualness in which she punches these people in the face is what really sold me.
Absolutely.
What was your favorite moment?
My favorite moment came from Kapow Number One. Not Kapow Number One.
Yeah.
From where did my doc go? There it is. My favorite moment came from Mindset Number One by Zach Kaplan and John J. Pearson. And I talk about this in the interview later, but it's the bottom of one page leading into the next, where we see these kind of taped out borders, panel borders. Yeah. And our lead character hits a guy in the head with a bottle and knocks him through the panel. And the next shot is this this spread of the silhouette of this body tumbling from the side of a boat into the ocean. And it's just this shot is just gorgeous. The city lights and how they reflect in the water, and the use of a white silhouette against the starry background is just... Yeah, it's striking stuff. And it's a hell of a way to really start your book.
It plays with space so well. It's very neat.
Absolutely.
Oh, if you go to the AIPTComics.com post, you can see this art in full. We know you can only hear us right now. Don't worry.
But don't you fret.
There is a visual element. In our next segment, top books for next week, we're going to talk about our most anticipated comic out next week. I don't know if I've ever heard of this book, Nathan. What is your most anticipated
book? It's Batman.
Oh, Batman.
Batman.
Yes.
Batman 125 by...
Na 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 na.
Yeah, ever heard that song? My favorite song. By Chip Zdarsky and Jorge Jimenez. This is the kickoff to their run. A bold new era of Batman. And I believe we have a preview copy of this. I have not read it yet. I am so excited to dive into this next week because I really don't quite know what to expect other than it's playing off of Bruce Wayne having these horrifying prophetic dreams, which, you know, Zdarsky's run on things like Daredevil will show you he's very good at playing with that kind of horror imagery. And in a series of murders that are someone is specifically targeting the billionaires of Gotham. Also, really excited for the backup story following Catwoman, which I'm so happy that we're gonna get more Catwoman is always a good thing. But yeah, more than anything else, I'm always so excited to see a new Batman run begin, to see how these new writers will tackle it. And these are two of my favorite creators in the biz working on one of my favorite characters. So I can't complain. Can't be more excited for this.
It's also exciting knowing that Zdarsky's going to be on this for some
time. He's apparently got it planned out for a while.
He'll never give it up. He'll be 99 and he'll still be writing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really look forward to it. I'm actually going to review it for AIPTComics.com.
Sweet. Have you read it yet?
I have indeed.
Is it good?
I can't spoil my review. Okay. I mean, everyone's anticipating my score, and if I say it on air, it'll just ruin. No, it's solid.
Awesome.
Jimenez has a much grittier style. I think actually Zdarsky said he asked him to go grittier.
Yeah.
Compared, of course, to his run with James Tynion,
sure,
where it was very clean and like almost computer generated in some sense, like the use of color, and,
absolutely,
in effects, but. It's an interest. It's just so cool. Like, God, dude, how many decades of Batman stories have we gotten? And we're still getting excited.
Yeah. Isn't that the best?
It is. It is. My most anticipated book of the week is Starhenge, Dragon and Boar, number one by Liam Sharp. That's right. He's writing, drawing, coloring everything on this one. There is some additional art by Matidia McCormack Sharp. So Liam Sharp, guy who used to draw very detailed superhero books in the 90s, is now gone full-blown, like, computer-generated. Mm-hmm. If you've read his Green Lantern run with Grant Morrison, you'll know. this book is more of that. But this is a completely original Vikings space stuff.
Hell yeah.
Really, just like, this is like, I don't know why it wasn't printed under Heavy Metal magazine. It's that quality of just insane visual style.
Awesome.
I'm ready for it. It's not everyone's cup of tea, I don't think, but Sharp has just been killing it with these really like psychedelic CGI visual style.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so pumped for it.
Yeah, this one fully went under my radar. So thank you for bringing it up.
He's got so many, I mean, Brian Michael Bendis, Michael Conrad, Phil Jimenez, Dave Gibbons, Kelly Sue DeConnick. He's got quotes from all these folks going, hell yeah,
that's
let's
awesome.
Get this. So, I mean, that's enough for
yeah.
me. And it should be enough for you.
It will. It is.
In our next segment, Judging by the Cover, Junior. Mm-hmm. We talk about our favorite cover art. Holy Batman cannoli.
It's a big Batman
we
week,
loved
man.
Batman this week. I really love Batman 89, number 6 by Joe Quinones. His cover is just so pretty.
It's gorgeous.
It's almost like, I don't know if he's painting or not. It's probably digital painting, but like, this is a movie poster.
It looks
right
like
here.
A Drew Struzan poster. Like, it looks like a
yeah.
classic, like, big tentpole summer blockbuster poster.
This is the poster that should have been for the third Batman film by Tim Burton.
Right?
That never was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely
so again,
gorgeous.
If you go to AFPTComics.com, you can see the cover in full. But like, we've got Catwoman, we've got a cool like bat motorcycle,
yeah.
we've got a Robin here that looks like he's gonna break my bones.
Well, and it
Michael Keaton Batman.
It also it incorporates elements from previous issues, like previous issue covers, like the which I think is just so brilliant.
Oh, true.
And mm-hmm. I love the detail of Barbara holding the Batarang, the remote controlled Batarang, right over her shirt, so it looks like
oh,
she's
sure.
got a, you know, the classic yellow and black logo. Yeah, it's great.
Two-Face. He looks
Two-Face
cool.
Two-Face looks rad. Yeah, I mean all of the likenesses are on point here too.
Man, could you imagine if we lived in another reality where we got that third film? And that was
I think
this?
About it a lot. I think about it too much.
You wake up in the middle of the night.
I keep wanting to ask Quinones who his visual reference is for Robin and for Barbara in this, because I feel like he'd probably have somebody in mind.
Yeah, you're probably right. What was your favorite cover of the week?
My favorite cover is Batman 125, but it's the John Jiang variant C. There's actually multiples of this one cover with different color palettes, but I went with the one that looks cyberpunk as hell, with the pink background, the cityscape looking like it's upside down behind Batman. He's sort of leaping backwards. It almost feels like a play on that that classic. That panel from, what was it, Batman number 500 with the debut of the Azrael Batman suit, where he's diving backwards. It's just the torn up cape is always a great, I mean, he looks like a freaking gargoyle. He's terrifying on this cover. Glowing red
Very
eyes,
cool.
dark figure of the night. I also have to throw out, there's a discussion on the leagueofcomicgeeks.com listing for
yeah.
this cover. Where one person says, three fun facts. The Batman costume has pointed ears on the top of the head like a bat. The utility belt is not found on a bat, but it is on a human because humans can make belts. So those are two of the three fun facts.
We didn't get the third
no
fun
third
fact,
fun fact. But I love it.
Wow.
Everyone's just and all the comments are like, hey, you forgot the third fun fact. Yeah.
I love how the city's like upside down as well.
Yeah, I know. It's gorgeous. It's such a great cover.
Really cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, it's pink and purple. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You do that, you're on
That's
the show.
Right.
Boom.
That's right. If the homesick pilots of Batman covers.
We need to have purple on the show as a guest.
The color purple?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Light purple.
I'm going to call Sesame Street. I have some connections with my day job. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
To Sesame Street. Maybe we can have purple.
That would
on.
Be great.
In our next and final segment, Zach Kaplan joins us to talk about Forever Forward number 1, a new sci-fi time travel comic series coming out this August.
Woo!
And yeah, we're going to get into it. So I'm with this is Zach Kaplan. Zach, you've got Forever Forward number 1 coming out August 24th. For our readers, what is Forever Forward?
Forever Forward is an action-adventure sci-fi series with Scout Comics, and it's being drawn by Arjuna Susini, colors by Brad Simpson, letters by Jim Campbell, and design by, and logo by Tim Daniel. And the basic premise is it's a mythic story into the future, kind of like if the Odyssey on this voyage to try to make their way home. But instead of the ocean, they are traveling through the future. It's a scientist named Lewis Moody and his four friends. And he is working on time travel, but he hasn't managed to perfect it. And he accidentally launches himself, his love interest, and his three friends 33 years into the future. They find a message that says the only way to go back is forward. And it is from their future selves. A little bit of a mystery. And so they decide that the only way to make it back is to continue to jump forward in time again and again to see if one day they find a way home. And that is...
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. isn't that always the way? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff at play here with different time periods playing out. We get a couple of glimpses of future stories, which is really exciting.
Yes.
And we had Ibrahim Mustafa on about 2 months ago talking about Retroactive, which was also colored by Brad Simpson.
Yes.
And I asked him, do you have to keep like bulletin boards or like a cork board to like keep track of all the different time threads and stuff like that to put the puzzle together?
We had to be very very well planned. And there's definitely a lot of world building in this series, and especially because we decided to look at time travel in a slightly different way. A lot of times time travel stories look at it as a loop. They're going back, they're going forward, they're going back, they're going forward. Our idea was to explore what the future might be as we go again and again into the future. But every jump, we wanted there to be a story of the future so that when you go to 2088 and then they jump to 2121, that you can see what has happened, what the evolution has happened over 33 years, and they jump to 2154, and you can say, oh, I can see what's happening to the world as we continue forward in the rises and falls of civilization. And there's all sorts of crazy things, fascist robots take over, and there's just, you know, lots of absurd kind of turns into what our future might hold. But it required us to kind of figure out the aesthetics of what the early, you know, there's a robot empire they come to. So where do we see the germinations of that, and where does it blow up, and then what happens after that? And so it required a lot of world building, and yeah, it was definitely in depth, and it was a really cool chance to kind of think about what our future might hold. And there's really a kind of theme to all of this, which is that, I'm not so sure that we're destined to head towards a brilliant, enlightened future anymore. And, you know,
listeners of our show will know I agree.
You know, I feel like I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s, and I grew up kind of, I don't know if everyone had this feeling that, like, despite the bumps in the road, that we were on our way towards a more enlightened, more civil, we were going to get it. Like, we're going to get there. We're going to get it. Like, you know, yeah, there's be some bumps in the road there, but we're on our way. And the past 5 or so years feel like it's all coming apart.
Real roadblock. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes me kind of feel like maybe this is the pendulum of time, that it swings both ways. It swings towards progress, but it swings towards, you know, destruction and turmoil and chaos, and we don't know what we're in for. And so it's just kind of the idea of looking at the future in that way. So in terms of the world building, it required a lot of planning.
The sci-fi of the 50s was promising us jetpacks by now, I think.
Yes.
You know what, one of the things you were talking about is taking a look at, you know, where we're going, where we're at. And one of the things that really like surprised me about this book was we see an invading force in the first jump, and so many Top Gun right now
we
is
can
doing
talk
it.
We can talk yeah. we can spoil that I don't know okay. I've mentioned it in Solicit.
There's a Russian invasion in the 2050s 2055
yes
and yes. So many movies and media try to keep the bad guy vague.
Like in Top Gun, the new Top Gun, yeah.
The new Top Gun does that, yeah. They're just like, we're going to go to this country. right. What made you decide to go ahead and say, yeah, this is who they're up against?
You know, it was an interesting, you know, at every turn I had to ask myself, what could happen?
Yeah.
In this future time. So what could happen 33 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously the story looks at some climate catastrophe. It looks at some technological catastrophe. It looks at rise and fall civilization. But in the near future, it just like it was more poignant to stay a little closer to home.
Sure.
This was even before the Ukraine war broke out that I conceived of this. But, you know, I could see the writing on the wall in the sense of tensions between Russia and Western democracies. And,
sure.
And I'd even read an interesting article about war games in the Arctic, where we were pitting our own military against Russia at moments. And so it just felt very timely. I live in California, and it felt like, you know, with what's going on, there were rumors of, you know, could we ever see secession in the United States? Could we ever see a splintering of our union? And so it all kind of was an interesting kind of premise to throw out to say, like, well, perhaps the U.S. finds themselves in civil war, and perhaps Russia is coming into the fray, you know, and invading California. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that Forever Forward does not land on the bookshelves, and then 30 years from now or 20 years from now, people say Zach Kaplan knew that.
It.
I don't want to call it, but it felt like, and it's a timely hypothesis, I guess. So
it definitely gives the story a lot of immediacy. Like that was something where I was just. Was kind of like, oh, we're immediately rooted in a history that, yeah, you can see a kind of a progression from where we're at. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think all of my writing, I like to find the barrier of groundedness and then the next step into science fiction or fantasy. I don't really like to take the full jump right away. I mean, we might get there eventually, but when we come into the first time jump, I didn't want it to be, you know, Jetson stuff yet. I wanted it to feel like something that's more grounded and real and make the reader feel like, oh, you know, it's not going well, but it's actually not,
it's still recognizable.
It's conceivable.
And that goes
like
along
that old
with,
joke oh sorry go ahead
I was just gonna say that goes along with your conception of the future not necessarily being so bright. There's a progress that's going downwards.
Yes. Yeah. And it keeps going down and down. That's kind of the moral of the book. It's kind of to try to find, or not moral, but the exploration of, like, you know, how are we supposed to feel about the future, and how are we supposed to feel about the present? And, you know, a lot of us, I think, from a day to day, even in our own lives, not historical global scale, but just in the nuance of the conflicts you have day to day or your work, you always go, you know, I can just get through these 6 months. It's going to be better. Like, I just got to get through this thing. I just got to go over this. You know, I'm not going to go on that trip. I'm not going to be happy now. But if I get this promotion, if I get this family thing under control, if I get anything, I'll be happy tomorrow. I don't need to be happy today. And that's dangerous thinking, you know? And so the main character has been this scientist obsessed with his research, and he's neglected his friends, he's neglected this possible, you know, relationship he could have with this girl that clearly likes him, and he's missing out. And, you know, each time they go into the future, they think that it's going to get better. And each time the future gets worse and worse and worse, and it's out of the frying pan into the fire. So it's really exciting adventure ride.
What if Pixar picked this up? That'd be interesting.
That would be good.
Oh, it's sort of like Wall-E. Wall-E is really depressing too.
Yes, yeah, right. Yeah, Wall-E it is. It's, but I mean, it's, yeah, the trash mountains and the love story in the middle of it all.
Would you find those things are kind of cyclical? Like when like things will get bad and then they'll get better, or they'll become a new status quo where everyone's like, well, obviously this is better than what we had. You know, do you find that those things kind of ebb and flow as you go forward in time?
Yeah, I think so. I think perspective has a lot to do with it. Sure. And expectations have a lot to do with it. And I think, as I'm feeling less and less confident about the future, I as just an individual am trying to look at my present more and more and live in it and experience it. And I think that's something that we're, you know, technology, social media, all these things have exacerbated the pace of life so much. We're so, you know, caught in the rat race more than ever in terms mm-hmm. of propelling ourselves towards our own happiness. And I think that being able to live in the moment and be happy is a real modern challenge. And so it felt really interesting to look at it in this, this question of what does the future hold?
There's so much detail to the tech designs. How detailed was the lab description in the script?
Yeah, I mean, Arjuna Susini is extremely, he's one of these artists that does Mobius style level of detail. Yeah. You know, really, some of the spreads, it reminds me of my work with Giovanni Timpano in Eclipse, who also loves that detail. And I picked Arjuna because I'd seen his work in Mad Men and Heist. He did this vault, Heist, How to Steal a Planet book. And the detail was just breathtaking. The world design was really inventive. And I knew that he could bring that kind of that vision to it. And we talked a lot. I mean, I like to really geek out on, what's the lab going to look like? And, you know, it needed to be a design that felt science fiction-y, but also grounded. It needed to have some high-tech level. But, it was a fine line. And so we talked about I like to look and find visual references and, talk a lot with artists. And so, we had to design what the time machine was, but it's kind of we didn't want something that was like fantastical or something that was over the top. We wanted it to be something that was just like, like almost the cell phone of time travel. It's just like, this little capsule thing, because it's really not about that. It's really about the journey. So we talked a lot about the different layers, about the what they find in the different looks. Arjuna is also a world building nut like me. So he was, we'll have to release some of this stuff later. He did all these like sketches of the different, different worlds, at different time periods, just to show that historical evolution. Wow. So really cool. Yeah. And then when Brad Simpson,
brilliant in this.
When Brad Simpson came in, we talked about, when to use different temperatures and when to use different palettes to kind of show when we wanted the reader to feel like at ease and when we want the reader to feel like, okay, it's getting more extreme and to kind of slow boil the intensity of color and the intensity of contrast so that as you get into the book, you can feel it's not going well, So it was really,
You can feel like the change in the energy in the room too. Like when everyone's kind of arguing upstairs to running into the lab as the storm is happening, like there's a real heightening there.
The use of blue, it reminded me of like Frankenstein too, with the lightning. And stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it taps into the kind of horror, subtle, there's like, anything you have a mad scientist of sorts experimenting something that could go wrong. There's got that genre undertones. It was a really kind of fun collaborative process to say to all the different, even Jim Campbell on the letters, to say like, how does this all play out as the story, as the journey gets worse and worse. So it was a lot of fun to build and great art. Amazing.
The first issue has a lot of double page layouts too. Was there a reason for that? Aside from a conventional, nine panel grid.
There was some thought. We talked early on about it and I brought up the idea of doing a lot of them for kind of two reasons. One, I thought it would give Arjuna a way to do lots of spreads that would show off the world. Uh-huh. And we have this idea of doing the world and seeing it from the same vantage point as the series goes on. But so you see it rise and fall. So like there are oftentimes up in the hills looking down at the vista, and you'll see that vista change over the series to kind of see what's happening into time.
Knew that. There's this amazing like double page of like the mountain and the trees and stuff as he's walking up to his lab. And I'm like, I thought we're going to see the same exact shot, but from a different time.
You got it. I love that.
That's nice.
That's great. Yeah.
It's a good visual reference.
Yeah. And so I think that was one facet of it. And the other facet of it was, we talked about how if you have a double page spread of panels, you're reading kind of in rows, and it felt like an interesting subtle visual kind of thing to get the reader doing that instead of down from a time standpoint, from thinking about a timeline. And so I noticed that when I read comics, you know, there are some artists that are doing this, and they'll just do double page spreads. Something Is Killing the Children does a lot of double page spreads in a really cool way, where you just have rows of panels, and it really just creates a different kind of sense of time because you're reading across.
House on the Lake does that too. It kind of hammers home like the day in, day out of that.
Yeah. And so I thought this was a really interesting way to kind of to do that, to use double page. So, you know, I said, what do you think? I'll write double paged and I'll write panels, and we can do it in a way so that we're just getting the reader. And then you're going through these busy pages of double page, and then you come to like a really breathtaking, you know, double page spread that's just all vista and just all landscape. Yeah, so it was it was fun to kind of look at the style of how to lay out the panels and the pages.
Yeah, you've got some of that in Mindset also, which I just love. That opening in Mindset, just like literally someone gets pushed out of a panel and off the side of a boat, which is like, I love it. I love that page so much.
Yeah, we had a great, John and I had a great time digging into layouts and Mindset as well. I did Eclipse and Port of Earth, and I did Lost Explorers, Join the Future with Aftershock. And you know, this was kind of a phase in my career where I was, you know, figuring it all out, you know, and I'm still figuring it all out. But I think I came in this year and some of the books that I was working on really interested in really getting nerdy and about, you know, what panels and what layouts could really accentuate the story, and trying to take more risks and you know, collaborating with artists and really digging in. And so John and I had a fantastic time doing that on Mindset, and Arjuna and I did that here in Forever Forward.
Speaking of like risks, you're working with so many different publishers now. What made Scout the right publisher for Forever Forward?
Yeah, I got really excited about what Scout's been doing over the past couple of years. They just seem to continually putting out great indie books. And, I had been talking to Charlie Stickney, their publisher, about just how impressed I was with, you know, some of the stuff they had been doing. I saw Dennis, agent of World was coming through there, and it was just amazing, and just really impressed with what they were doing. And it wasn't so much I just thought, you know, I really wanted to bring something to them and collaborate with them, and I thought a fun action adventure could be a really good fit. You know, I thought it would pop in their slate, and it would be a fun ride, and you know, it's still thought provoking and still very me, and you know, it was something that they gravitated to and said, yeah, we love this idea, let's do it. So
nice.
It was just kind of, you know, I that's what I found, really, you know, in terms of working with different publishers, you're really just looking to find the publisher that is passionate about the idea. You know, you don't want the publisher just to stamp it and say, let's, you know, that you want the publisher to say, oh, this is freaking awesome. We share this vision. And,
hold
and
on, Zach.
Charlie. And,
Kaplan Publishing. Huh? What do you think?
I know. No, thanks.
You see my hands? I'm doing this.
I see it. It's a marquee there. Oh man. Publishing is so, it's so much work and so daunting. I think so. Yeah. I think a lot of these publishers, I mean, there are some great publishers out there right now doing some really amazing things, but I think comics is booming. You know, the numbers have been in recently, and it's really exciting time for comics. I think we're in a golden age of great content, but you know, publishing, getting, you know, constantly reaching out to retailers and to build that that slate and keep all the things moving. I think it's a real challenge. I think I'll stick to just imagining Russian invasions and sure. You know, and mind control. That sounds a lot easier to me. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah, one of the things that I think is interesting, you know, a connection between mindset and Forever Forward is that both stories kind of center around someone's experiment working and not in the way that they expected. What is it about science gone horribly right that interests you?
Yeah. Well, that's the fear, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the fear. I'm really interested by smart characters who are not smart enough, you know?
Sure.
I think that there's a lot. I love technology, and I love in some ways. Some ways, I'm afraid of it. I think technology is moving very fast right now, mm-hmm. and it makes me worried that all the smart people who are working in certain fields of technology, whether it's AI or all this stuff, they're moving so fast to see if they can't. This is like Jeff Goldblum. Can we get a clip of Jeff Goldblum and
science Jurassic Park? Scientists were so preoccupied.
You didn't think about what you should. Like,
yeah.
And so I think it's, I mean, both of these characters in Mindset and Forever Forward mm-hmm. are very smart guys who are thinking about what they can do and not thinking about what they should do. And they're a little too wrapped up in what could be in the future as opposed to what could be right now. And so it's just a very, I don't know, you know, this is just the kind of things that come to me in terms of what's going on in the world and write what you feel, I guess.
But that's
my fear. My fear is that we're playing with some technology and we're not thinking about it too much, or mm-hmm. you know, we're not spending enough time being careful about it. So yeah,
stuff like one of my writers at my day job was talking about those like memory chips, like literally it was like that Elon Musk's like company is trying to put together, and the most chilling sentence was we've seen great success in monkeys. And I was like, Jesus
Christ.
Why are we doing this?
Yeah,
it's like crazy. TikTok too. Like the guy who created TikTok, did he think how many billions of hours would be wasted on it?
No, but I'm so glad he funny, did.
It's funny you say that, because it's not only the sci-fi technology like memory mm-hmm. chips or time travel and this stuff. Something like social media, right? Yeah. Or TikTok, like this mm-hmm. is technology. This is an advancement in how we communicate and how we mm-hmm. interact with each other.
Right.
And some of these things have really detrimental effect to them. Like,
I mean, that's all over Mindset. People not at the parties they're at because they're on Instagram instead.
Right. Know,
they're on
they're
live.
All obsessed with, here I am drop pinning and right. TikToking and tweeting and saying where I'm at and they're not even living the moment. They're just obsessed with their technology. Mm-hmm. That's technology. With no, someone was like, "Oh, we can do this. This is going to be viral," and didn't think about it. So yeah.
Zach, you have so many sci-fi stories. Just this year, you've got multiple books, and I'm curious: do you have a book of ideas that are just on tap, like an encyclopedia of ideas that you need to get to eventually? And how many good ideas are there that you're currently working
there
on?
There are 38. No, there are more. I mean,
it'd be amazing if you had the number like right there.
42 and a half.
Well, actually there are about 38 different ideas and I have them all here. I don't know. I think it's important for any good writer and creator to continue to be brainstorming new stuff. And so I have always been that way, that I'm always just trying to brainstorm new stuff. Any kernel of an idea I have, I've learned to, you know, write it down at mm-hmm. the earliest phase. You know, every idea I come up with usually starts off as some harebrained one-line thing, like Forever Forward. Like, how come there's no time travels where we're like only going forward? That'd be interesting. Like, and then it's coming back to that and saying, well, they probably don't work out too good. It's probably, you know, a bunch of maybe it's the rise and fall of things, and you know, it's building those ideas out. But yeah, I even though I have a lot of projects out now and I'm working on more for next year, it's I do like to continue to brainstorm and keep those ideas coming and read other books out there and watch movies and TV and try to keep the input coming to inspire me to explore new things. I get very, you know, it's not, I don't think it's healthy for creators to be so encapsulated into one project that they're not reading and exploring other things and they're not coming up with new ideas. So
sure.
Yeah, I try. Hopefully the well and the muses will keep bringing me stuff. So
do you ever find yourself putting out a book that maybe is beloved and loved and doing really well, but in, you know, privately, you know, there's this book that's going to come out April 2023 that's going to be way better, and you're like more excited about that?
I want to get to that stuff. You gotta love all of your kids, man.
Yeah, I kind of love all of my kids for what they are. I kind of know, I know where each of my comics will appeal to people in different ways. I mean, yeah. Breakout. I love Breakout. It's a teen adventure. Mm-hmm. Maybe a teen adventure is not for everyone. Breakout is a little, even sure. though it deals with some heavy parallels into our own world, mm-hmm. it's still got a lightness to it. Mindset is a dark noir thriller. So tonally, they're different. And I can totally appreciate that people are going to gravitate towards books based on tone and just what mm-hmm. they like. And I think what I'm having a lot of fun doing is trying to stay in the sci-fi lane and write only sci-fi and write as many different tones and subgenres in sci-fi as I can, you know, sci-fi Western, sci-fi adventure, sci-fi, hard sci-fi robot drama with fight drama, you know, like just what can I do that is completely different than everything else I've done, that's totally different, that's dramatically different, still sci-fi. That's the thing I'm trying to challenge myself to do. And know that it's all going to be different. It's all going to find different audiences. And I don't want to put out 8 books that are all like, you know, the seventh legal thriller from law courtroom drama from Zach Kaplan. But this time it's a, you know, corporate law. It's like, I don't, want to try to find
Forever Forward, SCU, huh? What about that?
That's good.
That's good.
Sci-fi, yes. Time travel lawyer. Interesting.
Well, now I like that. I like that.
That's pretty cool.
Do you have any, I mean, you've touched on a few of the mini books you've got out right now, but is there any particular projects you've got out right now or coming up that you'd like to plug or talk about today?
No, it's a little too early for me to tease anything. Actually, I can say Forever Forward's my last book of the year. I have 4 books that are out this year, mm-hmm. and I have more books that are in the pipeline, but they're all for 2023. So at this point in the game, I won't have anything new until early next year. I don't know if something could get announced at the end of this year, but
we'll have you back.
Yeah. Yeah. Forever Forward will be my last one this year. But
nice. Yeah, you've got Breakout right now, Metal Society, Forever Forward, and Mindset. Everybody go get them.
Yes.
Hell yeah. So Forever Forward number one is at August 24th, but there is a way to get it early, I hear.
I'm glad you asked.
Good call, man. Yeah.
I'm gonna be I and Scout Comics is going to be at San Diego Comic-Con, we're going to have number one there. And there is an exclusive San Diego Comic-Con cover by an amazing artist that I am not going to spill the beans on just yet. But we will have number one there. So if you're down at San Diego, come to the Scout booth. I'll be doing signings there, but you'll be able to get it throughout the con. And mm-hmm. You can get it basically a month ahead of coming out. So awesome. Pretty cool.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. Everyone rush to get their San Diego Comic-Con tickets now, even though it might be a little late. I don't know. Did they sell out? I don't know.
I don't know if they did. Are you guys going down there?
I'm not going to make it this year, unfortunately.
I'm skipping this year. Yeah. COVID and everything, I'm not super into it, but
it's going to be
I did cover it 3 years in a row, and it's been a minute since I've been to one.
I think San Diego's still going to be enforcing like
I hope so.
Social distancing as much as possible stuff. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Well,
yeah,
stay safe, Zach. It's going to be probably pretty crowded.
Yeah. Thank you. I will. It's an interesting time to be doing conventions. That's for sure.
For sure.
Yep.
But well, yeah.
The hustle's real, man.
Zach, thank you so much for being on the AFPT Comics podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.